Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I am going to be with you for about 55 minutes. Listen, today's an important show. It's an important show to many of the people who are watching this, but it's an important show to our entire community. And why I say that is this. We know we have a homeless problem. We know there's and the mayor and the city council and so many other people are trying to help alleviate that. But we got behind, and we have more homeless than we've had. But that said, I've watched the meetings. And just to be honest, I watched the meetings that I was getting upset because from my background, and nowhere near these folks' background, but from my background, homelessness is a Methuselah with a lot of heads. And one of the things we want to talk about today, these people work with traumatic brain injury, mental health, addiction, all these things. And they're experienced and they deal with it on a daily basis. So please, let's make this an informational show for all of us. Because I've had them on before. Kate and Rob, they're unbelievable. And Mark, full disclosure, is my second cousin, and he's unbelievable. And on occasion, he'll even acknowledge he is my second account, but not to too many people. So without further ado, for gois, soup du jour, Mark, just quick introduction. Kate and Rob, same thing, because you're new to this audience. So not all the audience, but a lot of it. So that and your backgrounds.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Mark McNeese. I'm a certified brain injury specialist. I work at alternative living centers where we screen our entire population for history of traumatic brain injury so we can implement treatments and planning and support groups for them, as well as working at Second Street. I screen as well, Second Street Second Chances program on Friday mornings.
Thank you. Kate?
I'm Kate Frizzell. I am the clinical director at the Alternative Living Center, which is a substance abuse treatment facility in both Pittsfield and North Adams, Massachusetts. I have a background in public education. Once upon a time, I was a high school teacher for moderate disabilities and taught English lit. And then through my lived experience with recovery, the new life, I have now advanced credentials, a license and certification in alcohol and drug counseling, and found my new home at ALC.
And I'm Rob Kirkman. My graduate training was in human service administration with a concentration in counseling. And I was a certified addiction counselor for 33 years. I'm now certified anger management specialist and a neuropsych counselor. Wow. And I'm studying to be like Mark. I'm studying, as is Kate and another staff member here.
We all want to be like Mark.
Yeah, we. You're a guy, Mark.
Yeah, you're the guy.
And studying to be taking an exam as a certified brain injury specialist. So that's my background.
And for my listening and viewing audience, they know what they're talking about. So believe me. And I will start off by saying this, that years ago, I was a beat cop on North Street and on the midnight shift, which was different. But I would have these folks come up to me because I would talk to them. And some of them, I don't know if they had, I knew they, some of them had mental health issues. That's why they were out at 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, walking around. But you had to be sensitive to them. I won't tell you what a sergeant once told me, but maybe I was too sensitive. But what I found was they just wanted somebody to listen to them, talk to them, be with them. And then addiction came in, and I would. That's so many more of them became addicted, not that particular group, but another group. So Kate and Rob and Mark, y'all deal with a variety of people who need help. And homeless, how many of them would you say are not necessarily homeless all the time, but in and out of homelessness? Whoever wants to
The
grab.
population that we serve right now, our most recent data looking at it, I would say our male population of residential clients are at least between 75 and 85% chronically homeless, and not always while in or as a result of active addiction, but chronically homeless, for a multitude of reasons.
Right.
And the multitude of, I'm sorry, the
Oh, go,
multitude of
Rob, go,
reasons.
go,
You
please.
said something at the beginning which really hit me. You referred to homelessness as, I think, as a many-headed hydra or something. But we describe somebody simply as homeless, you know, as if all homeless people are the same. And we do the same thing to addicts. If you're I've heard the sayings, I don't know how many times an addict is an addict. And that's nonsense. You know, there are as many types of addicts
That's right.
as there are addicts. And the same thing with brain injury. You've seen like Mark and folks at the Brain Injury Association will say, if you've seen one brain injury, you've seen one brain
Brain
injury.
injury. That's right.
And so all these issues and these people have complex problems that need to be sorted out and prioritized in order to help. Anyway, that's
No,
my two
Rob, that's
cents.
exact. You and Kate and Mark are hitting it exactly on the head. We can't minimalize homelessness to an apartment because, from my experience as an operative word, old cop, old is the word. Through the years, I've seen so many not seek treatment and okay. But that were it wasn't they were just homeless. They had a well, I used to say you got a bag of a lot of you're carrying a lot of things in your bag. And we didn't have the like you guys. There wasn't as many of those around then. There was AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, but they didn't want to go to. I remember one guy, I ain't gonna go to no meetings. He said that's just loaded with drunks. So he ended up passing. So. But mark your say.
So, full disclosure. So I'm in recovery. I'm in recovery, as well as being a brain injury survivor. I've had 15 brain injuries documented. And I've been at homeless multiple times in multiple different cities. And I can tell you now, from the places I've been in detoxes, I've been in rehabs, I've been in psych wards, I've been homeless. I've also been a CO, a corrections officer, been through police academy, worked at detention facilities. What I can tell you from my personal experiences from brain injuries and seeing veterans and the homeless population firsthand, often it's not so much mental health or addiction. It's a lot of times it is cognitive abilities and the pace of today's society and the way things are and how quick the world is today and how cognitive and even our resources and the paperwork you have to do to get through, the opportunities to get resources are too much in cognitive load for a lot of folks. And you'll find a lot of people, if they do get addicted or they are addicted, you'll find a lot of comments is, I don't care about the drugs or the alcohol. I have a harder time keeping up with the pace of the world. Even and right back to where you give people homes and places to be, well, they often choose not to be in those homes because the cognitive responsibility and how much it takes to upkeep a household or an apartment, these are the things that they lack and they almost desire to get back on the streets just because the cognitive load is too much out there. So, I mean, there's so many different reasons why we have. And I was just thinking as watching.
And I want to show the, I think Bob, you just said it too. You've seen an addict, you've seen one addict. I had a sergeant in Vietnam that I now realize from an explosion under his helmet not you know, obviously, but the blast was caught under his, he had traumatic brain injury, but then he became an alcoholic. So when you see people come in, Kate and Rob, and please tell us the because I don't have traumatic brain injury. I just don't have a brain anymore in somewhere. But the name of your organization, because I really want people to know that you're available.
We are the Alternative Living Center. We are located in both Pittsfield and North Adams, Massachusetts.
And how, if say I'm watching this show or sitting in the senior center or the Y or somewhere, and I realize I got a problem, I live in the street, what do I do?
So our outreach is can be done a number of ways. The standard way that anybody can access us is on our website, which is alccorp.org. That's alccorp.org. And there is an admission form right on there. Our main number is also on that website. And also, as Mark is saying, just being able to access some, technology or navigate through some things can be a challenge for a lot of people. We accept walk-ins. We have absolutely anybody who wants to walk in off the street and chat with us. The clinical buildings in both cities, in Pittsfield, it's at 207 First Street. And in North Adams, it's at 218 Ashland Street. And at any time between the hours of 7 and 5, there's someone there Monday through Friday, and people can just walk in off the street and talk to a human being. We are also very free. I won't speak for everybody. We're very free with our cell phones, and I do think that makes us special. So, for anybody that ever wants to contact myself directly for any question about any aspect of our programming, they can reach me day or night, 413-626-2445.
And
And our main number
yes.
is 413-499-6300, and that number will get you to any number of departments. But I always recommend, if for lack of nothing better to do in the path of least resistance, just call my cell phone, 626-2445. I'll get you where you need to be.
626.
2445.
Thanks. You know what you're dealing with here.
I know.
There.
Yeah.
You got to coordinate from the hand to the brain. There's a short there somewhere.
There's a lot happening there, I know.
Yeah. No, there's nothing happening. That's the problem. But and again, to these folks, they're not just PhD trained. They didn't take a course. They've lived the life and are in recovery. So when they tell you something, or you tell them something, it probably isn't the first time they've heard it or experienced it. Is that safe to say?
Absolutely.
It's interesting you say that because I'm in recovery, but I thought I was just in recovery from my addiction. But once my addiction was under control with help,
Yeah.
I discovered that I was an angry person, and
Wow.
that my so this is how complex these issues can be. And I hadn't realized that my addiction had actually masked my anger. And
Wow.
so I was one of those people who they might say, I liked that guy better when he was using, And so I had to recover from him and deal with my anger. And I just want to say that we also offer anger management here. I'm a
Right.
nationally certified anger management specialist, not because I thought it would be a good idea, but because it was the next right thing for me to do. And we find a lot of brain injury,
Yeah.
brain injured folks actually have anger issues related to emotional dysregulation. And so that's a significant part of our population. So I wanted to put that out there, that we offer anger management service on an outpatient basis and residential to the community, and in contact through Kate for more information.
I do this program. This is our third time together, I think. because I'm committed to people who need help. I'm not a judge. I don't judge people. You know, I mean, if somebody read my life, they'd say, "Oh, what a jerk." But what you guys do to help people, and thank you for that, Rob, because again, it illustrates the point I'm trying to do with this show, to help the people who are trying to help the people who are homeless. And that is, it's a multi-headed dragon. It can be. Addiction's covering, in Mark's case, traumatic brain injury, in Bob's case, anger. And I mean, for the listening and viewing audience, let's learn from these. We ha every family has or could have this issue or issues. I never realized till I started working with violent youthful offenders. At the very end of my tour, they were starting to talk about traumatic brain injury, troops coming back from the war. Well, they were manifesting some of the same things that these youthful offenders were. And all of a sudden now Mark and I are on a crusade along with I'm on a crusade for Kate and Rob too. And Mark, we want everybody that's in the criminal justice system should be tested for traumatic brain injury. Because you're throwing your money to give them a GED. I'd rather have you throw your money and they'll get a trade degree later on when they straighten their heads out. And I don't mean that to be crude or rude. I mean that from my heart. Because if this isn't working at 100%, not a lot else is going, in my opinion. And I got these guys here forgot more than I'll ever know. So, Kate, you're in recovery and you run this. What do you think the first step for people out there? And then maybe we may have people watching. We may have people with addiction issues. What's the first step?
I mean, the first step is just to open your mouth and ask for help for anybody. If you don't know where to start, that's why we're so free with our phone numbers. That's why we take walk-ins, and we're certainly not the only show in town. But that's
That's right.
we are the ones that I know answer their cell phones. The ones that are gonna that if it's not our facility, that's the best place for you. We will help you get to the place where you're supposed to
Okay.
be. Very often, the very first thing that anyone is going to need to do is a safe medical detox or at least a medically monitored stabilization. So, those facilities are McGee in Pittsfield, CSS in Pittsfield, Greylock Recovery, that just opened in Williamstown. We'll be able to get you to the appropriate place so that you can, be medically monitored or in an appropriate setting, stabilize and get some clarity to be able to look at, what's kind of really going on at this stage. Once the acute danger has been managed, to get you to the right place, whether that's outpatient services, a combination of things, whether there's more medical issues going on, whether it's long-term inpatient treatment, but to be able to guide individuals to the right spot, the first thing is usually getting yourself to a facility. The first thing that needs to be done is to safely stabilize so that you can make the next right move and and set yourself up for the best possible outcome.
And here's another question. It's open to any one of you to take it or expand upon it. Because I've through my career, I've seen this. I have a family member who has a problem. What can I do to get them help? It's open question.
Almost nothing.
Wow.
I will say, this is what I will say,
No,
and
that's
not to be
fine, Kate.
cynical, this is going to come down as it does with any of our loved ones to a matter of willingness. What we can do is, let people know that we will love them and support them into, well, until they're ready to make the right decision. We will absolutely sit with them while they make phone calls or, give them the information that they need to get to the right place. But if someone's unwilling to get help, it's all, we can do almost next to nothing. There is an option, to section to be able to file a, a civil, and that's a civil commitment. And so that is if you are a spouse or a blood relative, immediate relative of a family member, and that person is in grave danger or, a danger to self or a reasonable danger to others with the choices that they're making, you can take action through the court system and get them committed to treatment. I will say this, which is a little beacon of hope. You wouldn't think this would be the outcome statistically, as much as I hate recovery statistics, because like who's doing this research, but that's a whole nother show, right? But the outcomes for forced treatment and willing treatment are actually about the same. So while, while people may not start willing, once they get some clarity, once, the poison and everything's kind of out of their system, a lot of people accidentally will catch some willingness. You see it happen in incarceration. You see it happen with civil commitments. You see it happen with psychiatric holds that, when people can start to make choices for themselves, they realize, you know what, I really do want this. And, I, same different side of the same coin. A lot of people will go in willing and they're just not ready yet,
Not ready.
So those outcomes are just as unpredictable, for forced treatment as they are for willing treatment. So it's always a step. If you genuinely fear that your loved one is going to die, that is a step that can be taken. And I'm always willing to give that information because it's saved a lot of lives for sure.
And again, for the viewers and listeners, this is an informational, educational show from real experts, people who've lived the life and been, and I'm going to say this, they may have a different thing, but have been saved and and are in recovery. Now, Bob, your anger, just give us a kind of a backstory of your anger. You became clean from addiction, and that's when you realized you had anger management issues. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's certainly correct.
How did you know that? I mean, I guess, well, I obviously got mad at people, but Mark, how did you were drinking because of the traumatic brain injury?
Actually, side note too is talking about sectioning. I was sectioned multiple times, actually, and as a matter of fact, the last time I was sectioned was the first time that I met a brain injury specialist and put me on the road to brain. I went 27 years misdiagnosed from brain injury, and it wasn't until I got sectioned, thank God, that I finally got the help that I want the first time that I went to a neurologist after that, and that was exactly when I started sobriety, from that moment forward. So you never know. And that's why, you can, at the time, I probably felt it was the worst thing on the planet that someone could have done to me in the moment. And then, obviously in retrospect, and you hear this most of the time with people who have been sectioned or families, of course, there's some anger, some bitterness at first because we're not thinking right when we're being sent away. So, years later or whatever the case may be, it's a tough situation, but the person who gets the help ends up 9 times out of 10 thanking everybody who cared enough to go through that kind of mess and that kind of pressure to have them, helped.
Mark, would you do me a favor and resend them the link? Because they went off. They just it must have lost the link.
So we're hello.
Yeah, Rob.
So we're back. I'm going to get off of my computer because there's no video, but Kate has her computer in
So we're
here.
going to try to reconnect from
Oh, okay. All right. Whatever you guys do, I'll be here, and Mark and I.
Okay. I'm leaving temporarily here.
Okay. Oh, don't you love technology? God, I'm telling you. That's why when they make me wear mittens when I go over to the station. So I can't touch anything. That way they don't have to fix it. There she is.
There she is.
Hey. Hey, you got good. It was a good move. You really, it's brighter and nicer. So,
That's
bottom line, as Mark was saying, I as a police officer, I lived through going to this, and it was one, I won't mention his name. He was recovering. He was a cop, a recovering alcoholic, years and years since he had a drink. And he would always show up and talk to the, and you know, the guy was always angry. You know, the guy was always, and I would see him 4 or 5 months later. He'd been in the Brattleboro retreat or somewhere, and still recovering, still, you know, but he would say, "Boy, you saved my life." I didn't save it, dude. The other guy did. I was the cop to put the handcuffs on you, bro. You know, but what's the most challenging drug you guys are seeing now? I mean, there's, what's on the street that's, I know fentanyl is killing people, but is there anything else that is going to make recovery harder?
I will say one of the biggest challenges that we seem to be facing, or that I think is incredibly challenging, is the infiltration of xylazine in everything now as well. So not only is fentanyl in everything, and it is more resistant to Narcan, it's more resistant to, you know, to a lot of things, and much more powerful and much more apt to cause a fatal overdose. But the mix of xylazine that isn't everything that is causing necrea, you know, but, you know, I just lost my ability to speak. It's necreation, fash, you know, flesh eating bacteria, you know what I'm trying to say. And so people are getting, you know, wounds. So not only are the drugs killing people, but the residual medical issues that come with it, you know, xylazine infections are also fatal.
Yeah. Wow.
Necrotizing fasciitis. You. That's what I was trying to say.
Wow.
So, those wounds are chronic. Those wounds are chronic. So people are coming in with, you know, it starts with a little rash or a little abscess, and people are losing limbs. And they are losing, they're not, you know, they're losing limbs, they're losing their lives. Or, you know, if you're getting to the infection in time, it's still resulting in long-term wound care, wound clinics, the need for constant medical attention. And if you're on the street, you're not getting medical appointments. You're not showing up for follow-up care, yeah. You know, budget cuts and things. I'm not getting into all of that, but, you know, we've lost resources already. The mobile health units that were coming around to be able to treat, you know, wounds of any nature, but specifically those that are killing people, are no longer operational because of loss of funding and loss of grants and such things. So that is an incredible challenge, are the things that are being added to, you know, increase street value and to keep people hooked, is also killing them in more creative ways than they were before.
We're going to take a 1 minute break for you folks that are, listen, I told you in the get go, this isn't a chuckle show. This is, but it's a real life show, and it's a show that needs to be said, and it's a show that needs to be done. And you, the public, need to know. Because, again, there's all these new concoctions, and that's the word that I'll use. I don't know medically, but it's a concoction of all these different things that'll kill you. They may not kill you with an overdose. They may just eat your flesh, flesh eating. So please stay tuned. We'll have other shows where we can chuckle. But right now, this is serious, serious stuff. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. We are simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301. Please stay tuned. Learn. You have to know about this stuff. It's part of today. And when we come back, another last thing before we go. Now they're coming out, all these doctors are saying how bad alcohol is for you. Not just a couple of drinks. So we'll talk about that too. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Still paying for that monthly gym membership? How about that streaming service you never watch? Why not support WTBR-FM instead? For just $8.97 a month, you could show your support for our community radio station today. Go to WTBRFM.com and click donate. It's as easy as that. We need to support this station to keep it on the air, and every little bit helps. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
The Pittsfield Health Department is hosting monthly wellness clinics available to the community at the Christian Center, Senior Center, Epworth Arms, Capitol Square, and South Congregational Church. Vital sign checks, medication reviews, and health assessments are offered by the public health nurse. Our social worker will be there with information of available resources as well. For more information about these clinics, please contact us at 413-499-9411.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Larry Kratka here on WTBR, and I want to tell you about my show, Sweet Country Music. Now, every Sunday morning from 11 a.m. until noon, I'll play some of the best classic country artists like Merle Haggard, Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, Patsy Cline, and many more. I'll play nothing before 2008. Please join me Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. for the next edition of Sweet Country Music here on 89.7 WTBR-FM for the love of radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the morning drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we are back. And before we get started, I better do this before Mark gets in trouble. The views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way, no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, and or Peter Marchetti in the mayor's office, Peter White in the City Hall, and the person riding their bicycle in the northbound lane going south. That's why they have arrows. Don't look for the Indians. Follow the arrows. These folks today, there's Kate and Rob and Mark. They're all in recovery from a variety of different things. And today we're talking about homelessness is more than just not having a place to live. In many cases, there's so many factors leading to the homelessness, from addiction to brain injury to a lot of other issues. And that's why I have these experts. I want to talk about it because I watched the meetings. When you get to be my age, what else are you going to do at night? You can watch the city council meeting. Come on. What? And I understand the people's vigor. And the people want things tomorrow. And they want the homelessness problem solved. Well, the mayor and the city council and the city, they're trying to build alternate housing along with others. But it's just the thrust of this program, or what I would like it to be, and they've been wonderful in the first half, is it's not just an apartment that they need. Many of them have mental health, addiction, anger management issues. So as we try to go forward to help them, let us understand just that. And Kate and all of them provide resources, which we'll talk about in a little while, where you can go and try to get help, or you can refer somebody, or if someone's willing to get near, go with you, bring them there. You know, I took a guy, a good friend, good friend, up to the old McGee unit. just wanted a ride. And as far as I know, the other thing he had to do, now throw this out to the team here, he felt that he had to leave the area. And he's still doing very well, but he thought he could, if he could, after he, you know, he was in recovery, but he said the temptation to haunt the places he used to haunt. And I don't know if that's just emblematic of people or not, but he's left, he's been fine. And knock on wood. Yeah. Rob, what's your take?
I was one of those folks, met the bottom of my addiction in Syracuse, New York, and had to get out of town, so to speak. And I thought a good, healthy geographical escape would be to Vermont, because I thought all they had were cows and, you know, skiers and whatnot. But I found out very quickly that wherever you go, there you are. And I found there were plenty of places, haunts, in Vermont, too. And I brought it with me, so to speak. And I discovered, for instance, why they called it Mount Snow. And yet I found there in that community a group of people who I could really identify with because of their backgrounds, and they were healthy people. And they were church-going people, and they were recovering people. And so for me, that was my lifeline, my initial lifeline into recovery, was hanging out with these people who were ex-hippies and drug addicts who had found God in their own way. And I started hanging out with them, which made all the difference in the world. So that's my story about, if I was left to my own devices, I would have turned Vermont into another Syracuse, so to speak.
Yeah. That's, how about you, Kate?
Yeah, I would tend to agree. There is something to be said for an individual to get out of their element and, you know, to separate themselves from the familiar.
Right.
And again, wherever we go, there we are. So we talk about like geographical cures and, you know, those things don't necessarily exist. I do believe for myself that if I had remained in familiar territory, if left to my own devices, I wouldn't have been able to come out of it. And if put in an unfamiliar area, I would have found a way to continue doing exactly what I was doing. So, you know, for me, when I found recovery in, you know, against my will, incarcerated as an inmate. And then, you know, when I released to my old people, places and things, and it was entirely up to me. So right. It was creating a new environment within my old environment. So it was being around the correct people and making the right choices. I was legally mandated to stay in my area of destruction. So I didn't have a choice but to be there. So the choice was then to take what I had learned and to take, you know, my desire to live a different life and to stay alive and to create new surroundings in my old territory.
You know, I here's another question. Any one of you can take it. All of you can take. I was talking to a guy in recovering alcoholic, and he works with others, and he said one of the things that people in recovery need to be careful of is the alcohol-free drinks that taste like martinis and Manhattans and beer.
Mocktails.
Yeah.
Mocktails, thank you. What's your gut on that? What's your advice, I guess I should say?
I recommend that people, I mean, everyone is going to make their own choices
right.
at some point or another, you know? When we're talking about anything, whether it's non-alcoholic beer or mocktails or, you know, THC use that some people genuinely, you know, like claim is a positive part of their recovery. And I'm not here to judge or decide for another person what's going to work for them. What I do encourage people to do is not to take that gamble until you are in a place where you're going to be able to handle the possible results or consequences of those choices. So if you've never given yourself a shot to live an entire life without the, you know, with the absence of all substances or with the absence of anything that is, you know, reminiscent of your old life, then why take that chance? You know, if we can take it or leave it, try leaving it first, you know, and maybe in a year or two, you know, when you, and I say the same thing for, you know, for relationships, for people who may have been a part of your old circle and maybe they're doing well now. And we don't necessarily know until we're in the situation. So until you can stand on your own 10 toes and until you can trust your own choices, and trust yourself to leave a situation if it becomes dangerous, then I recommend you don't take the gamble.
Yeah. I mean, I to build on your what you just said, if you've been through all this effort to give it up, why would you tempt yourself? I mean, I'm that kind of person that, you know, I'm a diabetic, so there's certain kind of a bad diabetic, but and I have to monitor myself. Now every now and then I'll want something, you know, like a piece of European chocolate, German chocolate cake, but I don't take it because I finally have come to the point I can't tolerate it. I can't. I mean, I love it. Oh, trust me, but it my sugar. I've almost been hospitalized with sugar so high. So I think that's great advice. And you guys are the experts.
What you do know, you? I'm sorry.
What do you say, Dame?
I'm listening to Kate, and I think of that saying that bad habits are easy to form, but hard to break. Exactly. And good habits are hard to form and easy to break, you know. And that's like, you know, these are habits that we're talking about, which are unconscious, and they may go dormant, but they're there. And so for me, the most I could say, if you bring up mocktails, it might be a good temporary way of dealing with weddings.
Yeah.
Without drawing attention to yourself, but I wouldn't continue to use a mocktail.
Excellent. And the other thing I found too that, and I respect these folks, like when I don't know who drinks and does. So if I'm at a party, say, can I get you a drink? And I've had people say no to me, I have an issue with alcohol, or I can't drink, or something. And you know, I don't ever ask them again. You know, because I don't want to be the cause of their downfall. That's that. Basically, that's it. Because I've seen a lot of colleagues downfall. They, you know, they were great for, I'm done with it, man. 4 months, I'm clean. I haven't had a drink in 4 months. Oh, we're going bowling. All right, let me go. Next thing you know, yeah, you know. And you guys do know.
You know, there's this bias that you should be able to. I don't know where that comes from, that bias, but that somehow you have a disability or something.
That's a good point.
You know, you know, and it's just this false belief. I don't know how to.
Some people, it's a macho thing with some men, I think. You know, I maybe it isn't, but that's my take on it. Sometime, you know, I remember a police officer the chief sent us to get that, you know, was very, very proud of. He could drink a water glass full of Fleischmann's. And I tried it, you know, I said, that's like drinking goddamn kerosene. But the thing is, folks, watching this show, there's a couple of points that I'm really trying to get across. One, homelessness has a lot of issues, and these folks they deal with many of those issues every day. So just putting somebody in an apartment doesn't solve a problem at all. And the variety of addictions today. Oh, I wanted to say this. If you guys, of course, you keep up. Now the medical field is really coming out against alcohol and all the dangers that alcohol creates in the body and what the damage it can do. Maybe it's, I don't know. I can remember when they used to say two drinks, I forget. I don't want to put out any false stuff. No, I mean, for some people, no drinks, and that's the bottom line. Mark?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the great things about ALC is we do brain days on each campus, one brain day. So we teach brain education, neurologically informed care. So that neurologically informed care is we talk about all the different challenges the homeless have, people have. It's not just addiction, it's not just homelessness, it's not just brain injury, it's a multitude of different things. And as we address brains and teach about the brain and neurologically informed care, it addresses all these things. The bottom line to all of it is how the brain functions and neurotransmitters, and that's what we teach. And when we teach about, like, say, alcohol, there's not a lot of mystery. It turns on and off more neurotransmitters in the brain than any other chemical or any other drug out there. So six neurotransmitter systems it hits up against. So it can be the most powerful antidepressant on the planet, and then in return right after be the most powerful depressant. So, I mean, there's a lot to it, and that's why we get into neurologically informed care. It covers genetics, it covers brain injury, it covers addiction, it covers mental illness, and the medications that you're taking. So what we do is we educate our clients the baseline for all of it. So whether they're diagnosed with co-occurring disorders or whatever the case may be, they can take an educated look at what they're taking, why they're taking it, their behaviors, why they're acting in certain ways. There's a baseline, there's a reason to all of this, and it starts with brain function. So that's what we try to teach now at ALC one day a week at least.
That's fascinating what you just said about alcohol. I must tell you that, because I remember I went to a course part of the police training about understanding alcoholics. And one was just kind of what you said. When you deal as a cop, when you're dealing with an alcoholic, understand everything upstairs isn't working. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's how they said it. Very professional. Upstairs isn't working. So, You've been in the field. Do you see it get? And this is an awful question. You don't have to answer it if you don't want. Do you see it getting better, or do you see it becoming more intense? Throw it out to whoever wants to jump on it.
I'm gonna, you know, and I will say for me, the answer is kind of both, right? It's
okay.
Our number of overdoses, fatal overdoses, is starting to decrease, and that is because of the increase in, you know, in resources and, you know, naloxone training and the availability of Narcan and things of that nature. Now, as those resources decrease, our fatalities will go back up.
Yeah.
The drugs are getting more complicated. It's not getting any better out there, but we are getting better in approaching things in a different way in here. So, you know, the more that, you know, people come into the trenches and, you know, join this side of the fight, the more that we have, and I think the better our care is getting.
Yeah.
It's not getting any better out there, and it's not going to get any better out there. And that is just my, you know, and that's my opinion. But I don't see it getting better out there. It is exponentially worse. Every time someone comes back in after falling off and experiencing recurrence, not a single one of them has come in and said, I had a great time. Yeah, it's gotten so much better out there. It is getting worse. We are getting better, and I do truly believe that.
And thank you for that. And because, you know, what I sense, and I sense that came from your heart and your background and your knowledge, but your care. And I, you know, I used to tell the guys and gals that work with violent youthful offenders, they weren't born to be a gangster. So let's try to get into dig deep and how did they get to where they are. And I read all their files, and trust me, you didn't have to be Einstein to figure out when a 4-year-old kid is being thrown down a flight of stairs, he's not going to grow up to be a nice guy. So, you said something, Kate, and I'd like all of you to speak on it. The drugs are getting worse out there. Is that, and I don't want to go political here, but is that because of what? And I agree with you. I think they are becoming much, talking with nurses and people that I know, much more difficult to even want to hit the ER to deal with. What do you think it is? Is it chemistry? Is it money? It's always money. I mean, but what's your gut on it, Mark?
So,
I will get into trouble if I answer this. So you go ahead, take it. I'll say things that can't be aired anywhere. So go ahead, Rob.
I mean, we're living in the first world, stressed out culture, dopamine addicted, can't get enough of it. And it's very marketable, and it's about money. And money is closely related, and this is where I'll back off one degree from Kate and say, and money is very connected to politics and decisions that are made.
Wait, this is my shock face.
So we're stressed out, dopamine addicted, and we're a target market for those that produce this stuff, and they get away with it.
I will say this and probably get us all in trouble, or I'll take the blame because what are they going to do to me? They can't fire me because they don't pay me. So I fear also that I read, and you guys might get it from the library. It's called Anxious Generation. It's about today's teenagers.
Yeah.
They're saying that some of these games they play, they are programmed to be addictive. Well, if they can do that for games, they can program things to make you think drugs are cool. That's just my opinion. And again, it's haunting out there. And Kate has said it, Rob said it, Mark said it. The drugs today they're much more potent and dangerous, and in some cases fatal.
So Mark, I know, is probably going to have the final word. I hope he does. But we unconsciously view dopamine as our survival drug. So we do incredibly dangerous things to get that dopamine boost because our judgment is so impaired by the dopamine. It's actually part of our survival system. So it looks crazy to the rest of the world that we, you know, it looks totally irrational, but that's what it is.
Mark, we've got about 4 minutes, 5 minutes.
Back to brains, you know, and today we got society's tough on the brains. Phones are an absolute nightmare, and what they're doing to brains and kids' brains and attention. And it's an instant pleasure society. Instant pleasure society with dopamine hits all over the place. Like, you can get excess of instant pleasures anywhere. Them systems that we were supposed to have from evolution are no longer used for the right purposes or what they were made for. We don't need them anymore. So we're breaking them. Our autopilots are broken. And it's from these instant pleasures and dopamine society and a stressed out, highly cognitive, fast social society. It's not real threats anymore that we're up against. It's perceived threats. It's, you know, them third world countries can't figure out why we're over here with everything committing suicide.
Yeah.
You know, their brains are still operating and working the right way. We're going in the wrong direction. So really it's something that needs to be become aware of. And that's, you know, it's great that we are starting to look at brain and brain education, and that's really where it has to start going back or going to moving forward.
In closing, I just have to tell the three of you, and you maybe don't hear this enough, and I mean it from my very soul to my feet. Thank you for all that you're trying to do to help other people. Because my big thing, and I do it at the end of every show, I say God bless, and what can you do today to lift somebody else's burden? We're all in this together, you know, and without each other, it's a tough road to hoe. And I'm so appreciative of what you've been through, all of you. All three of you have been through, you know, what they say, to hell and back. Well, you've been there. And now you're going to try to bring other people down that same road. And that, to me, that's what life's about, helping other people. And when you need it, hopefully somebody will come and help you. But if not, you know you've done your best. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to take this as a threat. But I may stop in when you're in the Pittsfield office. I'll be the old fat bald guy with a cane. If they say somebody's here to see you, Rob, it's the old fat bald guy with a cane.
We might get confused if I have a haircut.
Oh, don't get a haircut. Oh, look at, hey, listen. But I'm always here for you. And I mean that sincerely. I've cut back to 2 days a week, Monday and Tuesdays. But I will always be here for you guys as long as I'm on doing anything on the air. Because I think what you do is a noble cause, and it's grounded in your own sorrow and recovery. So I don't know what else to say other than thank you for doing this. And I mean that, because there's hopefully if we can get one person through that front door of your establishment or in the ER or wherever, that I'm a happy camper. I'd like more, but we've got to start with people and people who want. As one guy told me, I said, "This is the old cop that used to come and help us." He said, "You know, I gave up drinking. No, because I got sick of waking up every day sick." And I thought, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You know. You guys are the best. Kate, thank you for sharing your office with Rob. If you need help, I'll get some security over there, and we'll get him put back in his own office. And make sure when you get out of North Adams, you get out during daylight. Mark's down here and still in Pittsfield. I do say, I kid you a lot, but I can't tell you how much I appreciate the three of you. You are you're what this country is about, and about what humanity should be about. Folks, three wonderful, beautiful people who care. If you have an issue or you know somebody who has an issue, they're not judgmental. They're helpers. They're helpers. That said, God bless. Today, lift somebody's load. Give them a call. If you see somebody struggling, I let a guy go ahead of me the other day in a big white line. You thought I gave him a Mercedes, you know? I mean, he couldn't stop thanking me. And you know, he had, anyhow. And here's the other piece. Do something nice for somebody today. We're all in this together. It's a long, lonely road to hoe if you're trying to do it alone. God bless. Guys, don't say, I'll be reaching out to you again. Thank you so much, and thank you for everything you do for this community.
Thank you.
No,
thank you.
And like I said, Mark, I got to get a hold of Mark if you want to get a hold of me. Or you can call me directly. Take care. Be well. Thanks for everything. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Two. Bye.